All right, riddle me this, Kev. What's one of the first upgrades you should do to your vehicle? What is it? What do you go for?
Well, you might think power, but ultimately, from a smart and safe perspective, definitely the brakes.
Yeah, no doubt. Upgraded braking system can really transform a vehicle's performance and honestly give you better peace of mind behind the wheel in any situation. You know, from the track, the off-road trails, even the morning commute, every single vehicle deserves performance brakes at an affordable price.
And no matter what your vehicle or driving style, PowerStop has complete brake upgrade kits for you. So head to PowerStop.com, fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to be matched with complete kits and components that are low-dust, noise-free, and feature upgraded stopping power.
That's right. You could join the thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicle into a stopping powerhouse today with PowerStop. PowerStop.com, brake upgrades made easy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast presented by CarParts.com. Here's Kevin Bird, I am Willie B, and today we're talking about driving. And not just driving, but I mean driving, right? I mean driving.
Like driving. Yeah, like driving damn fast, like faster than Lightning McQueen. You know?
Yeah. So, all right, I got to ask Kevin, fastest mile per hour you've ever gone?
175, 180.
Okay. How about the fastest you've ever been, say, on a road course or a race or some timed event where you were in a competition style format?
Probably 145, 150 top speed on straights.
Okay.
You know, going into a hard corner.
Yeah, which, yeah.
The tire wall's coming up on you pretty
oh,
quick.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. Well, I know you've run, you know, standing mile. I know you did that one race in Colorado. It's just wide open, four lanes or whatever.
Yeah.
What's your top speed?
I set a speed record at that one. Top speed, you know, in my bet is 212.
Damn.
That particular race was 190 point, like 777 or something. It was right under 191. So I always tell people 191. For that one, but it technically is a little bit under. So, yeah, you know, it's funny because when you talk about driving or a road course or a time attack or even quarter mile, right, you talk about letting a machine just be the beast that it can be, but also letting you just kind of come unhinged and pushing your limits, because the only thing stopping you is your limitations in the car, what you're...
No. The only thing that's stopping you is that tire wall.
Yeah.
You know, if you get a little out of hand.
Well, yeah, exactly. Knowing when to control your car, when to not, and how to control your car, regardless of what you're kind of pushing to the edge. But the great thing about driving is it allows you in any setup, you know, I've had just as much fun, you know, racing slow cars fast as I've done, you know, racing fast cars, you know, even slow. It's really fun regardless of, you know, how fast you're going, just to push whatever it is you're in. And the guy we have on today can do that in every freaking format on earth.
Oh, I'm so stoked, man. This guy can race anything. He can whip it around the track like nothing. And he's got experience in so many different classes of racing, and he's so damn good in all of them. So we're going to be able to pick his brain a little bit about what's going on these different setups, these different tracks, different driving styles, different vehicles. And you know, maybe we get inspired to like shift a little bit, like, ooh, maybe I want to try this style of racing or that style of racing, or just kind of get the inside scoop from the driver's position, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine, you know, growing up the way he did and the fact that, you know, you kind of grew up in a backyard that was an oval round track or had a crazy infield and a skid pad and time attack course. I imagine just seat time is one of the greatest, you know, sort of means to his accomplishments, the greatest sort of, action, because every plan, has an action. The difference between a dream and reality is the plan. And he has really practiced, and he started just fighting with the low dogs down here in normal races, and has worked his way to where the guys raced on every continent on earth. Man, I feel like he could race anything between semis and RVs to motorcycles, cars. He could drift Formula One, F1. This is a guy you're going to see at NASCAR within the next couple of years. And I want to make sure that he has a Willie B logo on his car.
Well, he's got it all because he's got the DNA, man. Third generation champion. I mean, I've met his dad. You're good friends with him. When you said Tommy was coming on, I got pretty excited because I haven't got to meet him yet, but I know all the aura that comes around him, and I know the family that he comes from. And you talk about growing up on a racetrack. I had a big wheel and a slightly sloped driveway. I mean, that was what I had, so I don't
Hey.
I even.
Hey, that was a
Compare.
racetrack, though. That we all had our
That's right.
racetracks. Just few of them was a big mile oval, and an infield, and all the other fun stuff that Tommy had. But I'm telling you, man, it still takes an immense amount of bravery and skill. A lot of people think brave people are without fear, but no, it's just it's how you manage that fear and still push forward. And Tommy is one of those guys, regardless of what he's in. Doesn't matter if it's Pikes Peak Hill Climb, which is an ungodly race, you guys. Go Google Pikes Peak Hill Climb. You won't believe these cars have been racing up there for, I don't know, since cars were invented. It's literally like miles and miles of, asphalt now, but it used to be dirt, and they used to hang it out. And there's no guardrails. There's a cliff on one side, sheer rock face on the other, and it ain't nothing but man in the driver's seat screaming like all the way up, It is one of those throttling type moments in your life where you probably got 15, 20 minutes, however long the first early cars were taking to get up it, or 2 minutes, however long Tommy takes to get up it nowadays. It's amazing. It's races like that that really define you. And I think we'll take a break now. When we come back, we'll have Tommy Boileau on, and just wait till you hear some of the accolades, some of the accomplishments. And I've been riding with the guy before. I'll tell you, he's a throttle jockey. It's awesome to have him on. So I can't wait.
I got my crayon and my pencil. I'm ready to take some notes, man, because I can drive fast, but I know there's a lot of people that can drive faster. Tommy is one of them. So let's take a quick break
back,
when
man.
We come back with the Two Guys Garage podcast with Tommy Boileau.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's the Two Guys Garage podcast presented by CarParts.com. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. Tommy Boileau joins us on the podcast today. This guy can drive the wheels off anything. I'm telling you, don't show up to a race with your girl all tight on your hip and be in the pits against Tommy. You're going to leave there being single, and Tommy's going to have your girl in the back of his truck. So what's up, Tommy? Thanks for taking the time, man.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. I'm super stoked to be talking with you guys, and I'm sure you're gonna keep pumping my tires like that, Willie. It's great.
Well, dude, you've raced so many things. Kind of give us a quick rundown of different things that you've raced, events you've been a part of, and where people are gonna find you next.
Yeah, I mean, I've done everything pretty much under the sun that you can think of. Like most professional drivers, I got my start in go-kart. So I was fortunate enough to have a family that was big into racing. So they threw me in a go-kart at 7 years old, and Right from the young age, I had a knack for it. So I ended up winning a couple state championships and doing really well in the early stages of karting. And by the time I was 14, I was issued my full competition license for sports cars. So racing spec Miatas at 14 years old against full-blown dudes who are 30, 40 years old, and did that for a couple of years. And then at 16, got my professional license, was running in the SECA World Challenge Championship at the time. And since then, man, I've raced everything. I've tested in Indy cars, NASCARs, V8 supercars, rallycross cars. I raced the American Rallycross Championship. I've raced semi trucks for a couple of years, both road courses and a oval.
Wow.
Oh, you're killing me, man. You're killing me. Dude, this guy tested an IndyCar, an F1 car at 16, bro.
What a laundry list of awesome.
Yeah, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a bunch of stuff, man. I mean, it's over the years, it all kind of starts. I mean, he doesn't necessarily get numb or you don't get used to it, but there's just so many different cool things. And it's like one of those questions people always ask, like, what's the coolest thing you've ever driven? And it's just so hard to pick. I mean, everything's so different. Every driving style is such a different mentality, but I just love it all, man. I'll race anything. I'll race a school bus against Willie if he's got one.
So if we go back to Days of Thunder, I don't know if you ever saw that movie, because you're probably young enough that might have passed you, but Tom Cruise just hops in a NASCAR for the first time and he's setting records. Like, when you're going from one style of vehicle and track to another, like, how long does it take to kind of dial in, you know, to really start getting, maybe not the breaking record thing, but kind of really using up the car, using up the track? Does it take, you know, a couple laps, couple days, couple weeks, couple months?
I mean, certainly not a couple of weeks or months. If that was the case, I probably wouldn't be getting paid to do this, right? So I'd say it's definitely usually a couple laps. I mean, every car is extremely different. I mean, even if you're hopping between like a NASCAR truck and one of the cup cars, it's a different driving style, even if you're on the exact same track. So going back and forth between different vehicles, it could definitely be a challenge. But I really think that's one of the big assets that I have, or one of the big tools that I've had growing up, is that I've got so much experience driving so many different things, where it kind of forced me to be a jack of all trades, if you will. So it definitely, it comes easier and easier the more you do it. But I remember a weekend of my early professional career, I was racing a little formula car as well as a big heavy sports car in the same weekend. And bouncing back and forth between those and trying to stay competitive in the top three was definitely a challenge. And that kind of opened my eyes to, especially for like a full season, really dedicating myself to one type of driving and mastering that car and that vehicle.
Yeah, because, you know, you get certain drivers that, you know, they're really good at IndyCar and they try to switch to NASCAR or vice versa or Formula One, and they can't be competitive in another arena, you know, but you know from where they were that they were top of their game. So to be able to just jump into different vehicles like that, it's impressive.
No, and I appreciate that. It's definitely something that I've been gifted with, I guess you could say. I've loved doing what I've been doing for my entire career, and just really having that opportunity to bounce back and forth between stuff and drive so many different cars. It's just so cool.
I want to pick your brain about how normal people, like you said, you can get in just about anything and feel it out in a lap or two. So what are the things when you're feeling out a car, trying to understand it, sort of, do you walk through, how do you sort of understand a car quicker for people out there that don't get the seat time you do?
So really getting to the limit of a car is really what you're ultimately looking for, right? So getting right to the limit of adhesion, whether it be under acceleration, cornering, or even braking. So it's a matter of just really having the confidence in your own ability to take that car and throw it into the corner, maybe then you're probably comfortable with, and knowing that if it does cross that limit, that you have the skill set to correct that mistake, whatever it may be. So kind of my process, no matter what type of car it is, the first thing that I try to find the limit on is how much grip does this thing have under acceleration? Cause that's one of the big ones where it can vastly just be incredibly different. Whether it be like when I was racing those semi trucks, if you just matted the gas and try to create wheel spin, it would do it instantly because it's making like 7,000 pound feet of torque or something. So that was definitely.
Wait, did you say when you mat the gas pedal on a semi, it would roast the tires instantly? Did I hear that correctly?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, these were full-blown racing semi-trucks, so there's obviously
awesome.
A big trailer
That's
behind awesome. You, not the full 18-wheeler, but the truck I was racing, I think it was something like 16 or 1,700 horsepower, but it was making close to 5,000 pound-feet of torque, so you could be in top gear, which I think was like 8th or 10th gear or something, I don't remember off the top of my head, and you can mat it and just immediately create wheel spin, so The throttle management on those things was incredibly difficult because we're not running on a racing slick either. They don't really make a racing slick for a semi truck. So we're running on regular DOT tires that are for on the road trucking, and we just shave them down to give them a little bit more grip so they're not creating all that heat and friction and stuff. So it was ridiculous trying to manage that. And then speaking in that same realm for the trucks, trying to figure out the braking capabilities of those things. Now, they were kind of an anomaly because they're water-cooled brakes, because they get so ridiculously hot when they're doing the over-road trucking stuff. But even when we were racing them, and we were running on like half-mile paved ovals doing 120, 130 miles an hour in a 13,000-pound truck, it built up a lot of heat into the brake system. So finding the capabilities on the brakes and the acceleration for the trucks especially was really difficult. But more often than not, if you're in like a sports car or a formula car, it's really just trying to figure out the limit of adhesion going through the corners. So where that thing is going to step out and how snappy it is, how much counter steering you need to give it, things like that to really just get comfortable when that car does step out, because it's kind of inevitable when you're on the edge, what it's going to feel like and what your corrections are going to have to be.
See, and I just want to point out, Kevin, I just want to point out, he said something very important. I want to just rehash more. It's knowing you have the ability to correct it. And the problem with most people is they get halfway through the turn and they run out of talent. and yeah, I've been there. You run out of real estate and talent. It happens. I know. But you know, if you're Tommy, you know, Boileau, then no, you just go ahead and whip it to the end, man, and see what it can do.
You just fix it. You just correct it, right? we're aiming the wrong way, going into the wall, going, uh-oh, and he's like, I got this.
It's certainly not always been that way, right? I mean, there's been a little bit of a learning curve to get to the point where it's like, okay, I know I'm good enough to be doing this, but I think a lot of that, too, in my early career, especially like getting right into professional sports car racing, I was working for the Bob Bondurant School at the time, so every single day I was behind the wheel of a brand-new Corvette ripping it around the racetrack with some of my best friends, so I think having that experience and being able to just drive a high-performance car literally every single day to the limit and making plenty of mistakes throughout the way, I'm sure. I don't want to admit any of it right now, but doing a few stupid things here and there and kind of understanding, all right, that was a little bit too far one way. It really forces you to mature, I guess you could say, behind the wheel and really just learn the craft in a quick manner.
I've been on plenty of tracks and, you know, you take your first couple laps and you figure out all the turns and stuff. You know, obviously you can look at the map and try to memorize it and whatnot if it's an unfamiliar track. But you've got your break points, you know the corner, what's coming up next, where you're setting it up, blah, blah, blah. But when you've got something as big as like Pike's Peak, where it's super long, or you've got like Nürburgring or whatever, where it's, I don't know how you can memorize the whole track. So how do you go into something like that where you're trying to maximize every corner, but you're not exactly, or are you sure of what is that corner and what speed could I hit it? And just like you're saying, I mean, you go too far into some corner and you're off the other end, no matter how good you are. So how do you tailor that?
To answer your question of can you memorize all 156 corners? Absolutely. And really, if you're going to be out there competing for a win or even just trying to set a record of any type, you really do need to know every single one of them. So it's, in my mind, it wasn't an immediate like, okay, I know this. It was a lot of time and dedication on a simulator to learn that track. So that was kind of my method. I would take my simulator that I've got at home. It's the full virtual reality setup. And I would break the track into segments. So I'd run like the first, I basically would do the three segments that we run during actual race week. So the first segment is your qualifying section. So it goes from the start line all the way to Glen Cove, which is that shack in the middle where they check your brake temps during regular hours of the road. So that segment's about, I think, 3 minutes long, but it's a good distance. It's almost halfway up the road, actually. And then the middle segment is from that Glen Cove up to Devil's Playground, which is a pretty simple segment in reality. It's just all the W's, so all those really tight hairpins back and forth, back and forth. But a lot of guys get lost there because especially on Pike's Peak, there's so many corners that look almost identical coming into them and exiting them. One of them may lead into a second gear, really tight corner, whereas one that looks almost identical is going to lead into a fifth gear, flat out 120 mile an hour corner. So really learning those key places on the road where you need to know what's going on. That was really where I placed my priority, is learning all those, I call them twin corners. And then just hours and hours on the simulator. And then it would get to the point where I would test myself. So I'd pull up a random YouTube video from somebody racing the road in the past, drag that little bar on the bottom to a random spot on the road, hit pause, and then have to write down the next three corners. Or I'll have my dad sitting there. I'd be like, all right, here's what's coming up, just to make sure in my mind that I knew what was going on.
That's legit training right there, man. Wow.
Yeah, no, it's a serious race, man. You gotta be prepared for Pikes Peak. It'll bite you in a hurry.
You know, it's funny, when I was racing that Central City Hill Climb, something similar, a few years ago, the weekend before the race, I spent the whole week, every day I would go up there and just run that road.
Yeah, so
you're right. I ran the road. I saw one other racer. I was a rabbit, so people got to chase me, right? You had rabbits, and you would get a group of 7-10 people behind you. They would chase you, you know, and it really is knowing the course, and spending day in and day out, you know, for 7, 8, 9 days. I was up there just burning gas, man, learning it. Because if you don't, there's no way you could be competitive on it, especially nowadays with all the tools you have to train, and especially how fast some of these guys are going. And you got to look at your experience. Like, you've been in some really fast machines. Was this Pikes Peak race, was this one of the more aggressive races that you have ever sort of put yourself in? Was that the big challenge? Was it something that you just want to knock off your bucket list? Like, how is that race for a guy like you?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those iconic races in America. I mean, it's the second oldest race in the country behind the Indy 500. So it's always been one of those things where there's a mystique to it, right? It's like, holy crap, that's Pikes Peak. All the famous racers from the history of racing, all dating back to 1916, have competed in this event. And especially growing up in Colorado Springs, like, I look at Pikes Peak every single morning when I wake up. So that really adds a special place in my heart and head to be like, yeah, I need to compete in this race one day. And it was always kind of one of those things where it was like, yeah, it's all dirt, or it's part dirt. So it wasn't really my wheelhouse necessarily, especially at a younger age. And then as soon as the whole thing was paved and I started getting some opportunities and offers to go compete in the race, it definitely, it's a difficult mindset to get into, to just kind of accept the fact that you're racing up Pikes Peak, and there's a legitimate chance that if you make a mistake, you could die. So it's
yes, for people that don't understand, honest to God, Pikes Peak, how many miles up is it? How many turns? What's the elevation drop? Because that does play a big role into it. And there's, understand people, there's no guardrail. It is a rock sheer face on one side where they cut the, you know, cut it out of. And, you know, you got areas where you got turns and nothing but rock gardens and cliffs for thousands of feet on the other side.
There's like inches off the side of the road, inches off the side of the road.
Yeah, no,
you know, you drop a tire and you're off the side of the mountain.
Yeah, there's certainly no room for error up there. I mean, and there's so many variables that make it an incredibly dangerous race. So it's a 12.42 mile race, and there's 156 different corners as you work your way up. So that in itself, just trying to memorize all that, like we've been talking about, is incredibly challenging. But another one of the crazy things is that a lot of people don't think about is that you start the race at, I think, 9,700 feet elevation or something, and you finish over 14,000 feet. So fortunately, once again, growing up here in Colorado, I've got a pretty high blood oxygen content. Whereas a lot of guys that come in from like even California or states with lower elevation, they're struggling with altitude sickness as soon as they get to the start line, let alone the finish line. So we all run oxygen pumped into our helmets just because it kind of takes away one of those inevitables or one of those variables of like, hey, it's an excuse of why you made a mistake. And it just keeps you sharp. You really have to. So that's one of the big challenges up there. The other thing is just the changing road conditions. I mean, this is a public highway during the day, except for that one day of the year where they open it up for us to race on. I mean, even on practice week and qualifying day and things like that, we're up on the mountain at 4 a.m. because as soon as 8 o'clock hits, they're sending traffic uphill. So it's an incredibly unique race, but it's not maintained as a proper racetrack would be. So there's no sweeping crew keeping gravel off the road. There's nobody doing really checks if there's fluid or anything like that before your first run. They'll send a safety truck up and he'll kind of just do a quick sight in, make sure there's no big debris on the road. But aside from that, it's pretty much, here's what it is, have at it, good luck. And we're doing our first runs at 4 or 5 in the morning as soon as there's a first sign of light. And last year, for example, I was doing almost 160 miles an hour on like 5 or 6 different spots. It's just mind blowing, man. It's a crazy race, and it's the biggest adrenaline rush I've ever had or probably ever will have. And it's just incredibly fun, man. It's insane.
All right. Well, look, we got a lot more questions, and we want to sort of lean into your knowledge and experience to help people become better drivers. So think about different race setups. Think about what you're looking at in a car. What's the first things you're looking at adjusting? What's the first things when you hit a track you're looking at for your ride? So think about that. We'll take a quick break. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Byrd. I am Willie B. We have Tommy Boy Low with us, one of the baddest drivers ever. Make sure you check him out. More with him in just a minute on the Two Guys Garage Podcast. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast presented by CarParts.com. We have Tommy Boylo on with us. I'm telling you, man, this guy's raced everything, anything. He's like, when me and Kevin, when we get side-by-side in rental cars, like, we're racing. There's no doubt. I don't care what it is. We're racing. Tommy does that with anything and everybody, point blank. If you're in a grocery store with him, he's going to race.
Dude, he could beat us in a shopping cart. We'd be in our rental cars. He'd beat us in a shopping cart, you know?
Absolutely. So, Tommy, when you're going to a race, think about, you know, let's just drop it down a level or two. And most weekend warriors, because that's kind of what I am, when a weekend warrior shows up at a racetrack, what's the first three to four things he ought to keep in mind on his car when he pulls it out of the trailer? Things to double check, things to go over. What's he looking at on a track he's familiar with?
Right. So especially if it's a track you're familiar with and you already know the layout, you kind of know all your references and things like that. Obviously, number one, make sure your car is ready to head out on the track, especially for enthusiasts. I can't tell you how many times I've seen somebody rip out onto the track, forget to torque their wheels, and a wheel goes flying off or something like that. Or I remember there was one guy that we were actually racing with, and he left a full 5-gallon jug of gasoline in his trunk ripping around the racetrack. So I think that's the first thing, right? Just make sure you pull all your crap out of the car. Don't leave gasoline bouncing around with your loose battery in the trunk. And make sure that you torque your tires, set your pressures, get everything ready from a safety standpoint. That way there's nothing weighing your mind down. You can actually focus on the task at hand. But really, as far as like setup stuff goes, most enthusiasts aren't going to have the crazy options that we do as professionals. I mean, you look at a full blown professional race team, you can tweak everything on that car. And by twisting one or two little knobs, you can make that thing magic or complete garbage. So, I mean, if you're looking at the most simplistic things that can really make a huge difference, one of those is going to be your tire pressures, right? I mean, you can really improve or hurt your lap time with a big difference of 5 PSI. So in reality, it's really not that big of a swing, but it can really make a big difference. So each track's going to be different. It's going to be different depending on what the track temp is and humidity, things like that. But generally, you're going to run a lot lower pressure on your tires for ripping around the racetrack than you would driving back home. So that's where you see a lot of guys will bring multiple sets of wheels and tires and kind of have a dedicated set.
Sure.
It's always my favorite when you get the guy that's got like his Blizzax out there, like studded snow tires. He's like, dude, I've got no grip. But I think that's one of the first things to look at is going to be your tires. And then the next thing that's pretty simple that you can start looking at to really change the characteristics of the car throughout the middle of a corner is going to be your sway bars, your anti-roll bars. That's one of those things that it can make a big difference, and it's actually fairly simple to do. So if you've got multiple adjustments in either your front or rear bar, that's definitely one of those things that, depending on the scenario, you can tighten it. So stiffen up that front bar, it's going to give you a little bit more bite in the rear end, actually. So really looking at your sway bars, you can affect one end or the other, but it's kind of opposite. So you're affecting your rear grip level with your front bar and your front grip level with your rear bar, really more so than the other way around, which is kind of counterintuitive to what a lot of novices think. But
so say that again. Say that one more time so people get it.
You're affecting the front grip level with your rear bar more so than the rear grip, and you're affecting your other way, vice versa. So front bar affects the rear bar affects the front more so than front and front, rear and rear. So that's one of those things that a lot of guys will just be struggling all day with a front grip issue, and they'll just keep tweaking that front bar, where in reality, the issue probably lies in the rear end.
Nice.
So that's one of those first things I would look at. So you got your tire pressures, your sway bars. And then if you do start getting into adjustable dampers, I mean, that's that's really where the magic's at. I mean, if you can have even just a one-way adjustable damper, that can help you a ton.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's in terms of one of the biggest adjustments that pretty much all professional race teams all around the world are going to be tweaking is the high speed and low speed compression and rebound within the damper itself, or the shock, I guess a lot of guys call it. So that's one of those things that's really where the magic is. That's when you get to a track with your baseline set up and you kind of know where the balance is going to be. And every time you show up to the track, it could be a little bit different. So just by turning knobs here and there, making little small adjustments, I mean, you can hurt or help your lap time within probably 5 or 6 seconds. It's pretty drastic how amazing wow. shocks are. So that's one of those huge things that everybody's going to be working with on the professional level. And that can really give you a really big advantage on the amateur level. If number one, you've got the budget to do it. That's usually the biggest factor yeah. there is people can't afford to spend $20,000 on shocks. But even if you get a nice pair of shocks that aren't all that expensive and they've got some adjustment, that in itself, and then obviously having the knowledge on what to do to adjust those shocks to benefit you, it's a huge, huge thing. So that's where, especially in my early career, I dedicated a lot of time to learning how to make the car work for me, because everybody's driving style is a little bit different. I can run lap times almost identical to one of my best friends, Rob Stout, and his driving style is just completely different than mine.
Well, I know there's a huge science in setting up your dampers, your shocks, but if you could boil it down, especially if someone's got maybe just a two-way adjustment or even a single adjustment, you know, compression, rebound, how would you give them just some tips on just where to start? I mean, do you do it just by feel? Like, oh, I like that corner a little bit better, so I like that adjustment. Are you doing it by time or time into different corners? And then, you know, where do you start? Do you start with your compression side only? Do you start with the rebound? And then maybe which type of corners is it helping you or hurting you?
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, generally speaking, I start out, especially on like a track that maybe I'm new at or that I don't really have a good setup for yet, I'll start out with pretty much all my adjustments set right in the middle. That way I can go either direction. If you start out one way and it's completely garbage and you don't have adjustment to kind of fix it, then you're kind of in a pickle there. So I start out with everything in the middle as far as compression and rebound. And generally I tell guys to worry more about compression adjustment, or they call it bump a lot of time, rather than the rebound itself, just because it's easier for a lot of guys to understand. It's pretty simple. You load that shock up and how quickly it compresses is what you're really affecting. So that's one of those things where, a lot of guys tend to overdo it. So if I get into a corner and the car starts maybe having a little bit of oversteer, so I turn in the corner, the back end starting to slide out on me, I actually want to slow down that compression in the rear end. Maybe it's loading too fast and it doesn't have time to really load that tire. It's kind of using that tire as an additional shock absorber, which isn't necessarily a good thing. So that a lot of that can be affected with your inputs as well, but let's just say all your driver inputs are accurate. You want to actually slow down that compression so it gives the tire more time to load itself and it doesn't just start snapping loose on you. So I'd slow down the compression. And then another one of those big things is going to be like, for your front end, let's say you've got a push, you want to do the same thing. You want to give the tires more time to load. So you're going to slow down that compression. Now on the other end of the spectrum, if it's just not wanting to work with you, the car's just kind of feeling lazy, you want it to be more responsive, that's when I would actually start stiffing up some of those compression adjustments just to give the car a little bit more initial bite, and maybe less time to load that tire.
No, that's great stuff, man. Now, what about on the yeah. rebound side? Because that's where the compression, I see it in my head. And I played around a little bit with it. Totally makes sense. But the rebound, I'm not sure what's happening there. Because when your tire is being pushed back down to the track, right?
Yeah. So the rear rebound, I mean, it's really one of those things where, especially as you're aggressively getting onto the brake pedal, if you've got your rear rebound set too quick, it's really going to try to like buck the rear end off the ground and really plant that front end of the ground really aggressively. So it can really help or hurt you. If you're in like a front wheel drive car where you want the thing to rotate for you on entry, you can really speed up that rear rebound and plant the nose. That way you've got a lot of front bite initially and not a ton of rear grip. So it's going to want to rotate. But if you're in like a rear wheel drive car, or especially something without a lot of horsepower, like a spec Miata or something, if you've got that rear rebound set too quick, the car is just going to kind of feel like it's on edge all the time. It's going to be really dancey and just kind of feel nervous. So you want to slow down that rebound just to let the front end plant a little bit slower and let that rear end decompress a little bit slower, just to give you the maximum amount of grip as you transition from your braking zone into the corner.
Man, you know what you need to do, Tommy? You need to make a book called Suspension for Dummies, right? and just like, you know, a bunch of quick tips that, yeah. you know, most people either forget about or they learn for a minute. And then when it's time to go hit the track, you forget or you can't recall it. Or what was he saying about A, B, and C? Because I'm telling you, there's a market out there for that. We all want to drive like you, bro. We all want to, you know, brag and boast and be badass behind the wheel like you are. It's just, you know, we don't have the means to practice. And when we do, knowing some of these things would be great. Let me ask this before we run out of time. Where do you think you'll be, you know, between racing Pikes Peak and, you know, all these, you know, people and teams asking you to race? Where do you think you're going to be in 3 to 5 years? Where do you see Tommy in 3 to 5 years?
Oh, man. Obviously, I mean, I've got big dreams, right? It's like the inner kid in me is still wanting to be that Formula One driver, but I know that ship has sailed. But I've got some pretty cool stuff in the works right now. So for Pikes Peak 2021, I'm racing the same Camaro for Dassault Designs that I ran last year. Here we had the data to show that we were going to be under the record for the class and probably the third or fourth fastest car ever until we had a mechanical failure. So we're racing that car again this year. They're doing a bunch of sorcery right now with some secret stuff. I'm not even going to say what it is yet. We're working with some aero companies to get a lot more aero underneath the car, and it's just going to be even faster, which is going to be incredible. So Pikes Peak is going to be a big one this year. Hopefully we can go out there and win the overall, set a record in class. Wow. And hold that King of the Mountain title, bring it, well, I guess it is back in America now, but keep it here in America. So that's one of the big things. And I'm also working with a team right now that has a NASCAR truck program in the Gander Outdoor Series. And it sounds like I'm going to be making my NASCAR debut later this year at Circuit of the Americas.
Nice. So,
ripping around in a NASCAR truck on a Formula One track. It doesn't get much better than that. So
no.
That's the plan. And hopefully 3 to 5 years from now, maybe Penske signs me for a cup ride or something. You never know.
Yeah,
man.
All right.
Well, don't forget us little guys in that Two Guys Garage podcast, man. We're glad you are a part of it. Where do people find out more about you socially? How do people follow you? How do people get more of Tommy Boileau?
So my last name's hard to spell, but unfortunately from a young age, I've always used it for all my social media handles. But my Instagram is just Tommy Boileau, and then my Facebook is Tommy Boileau official fan page. Those are really the two that I use the most just to keep people in tune with what I'm doing. It's just the quickest and easiest. Working on a website right now. I've got a new social media project that I'm working on with some guys that's going to be a lot of fun. It's hopefully going to be a competitor to some of those bigger sites, and we'll be able to tackle them. So keep your eye out for that. But those are my two big ones, and it's just Tommy Boileau, Boileau.
There you go,
there
man.
Go.
Dude, I can't wait to cheer you on. I can't wait to see you doing a NASCAR thing. I can't wait to be like, yo, that's my dog right there. I knew him when he was just a kid. Wait, you still are a kid. Well, that dude used to outdrive me when I was younger.
No, I'm stoked for it, man. It's gonna be an absolute blast, and it's and we'll see what happens. Hopefully I can go out there and have a good showing, and you never know what can happen. NASCAR is a crazy world, and I think they need a big tall blonde dude out there ripping around with all those good old boys from the South.
Yeah, man. indeed they do. Well, look, man, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for teaching us a little bit about driving. Like, if you paid attention, everybody learned something today. I don't care where you're at in the game, you learned something. You picked up a tip.
I used up half my crayon taking notes.
Hell yeah.
Well, I was eating some of it, so, you know.
Exactly. Look, man, hey, we thank you for coming on and spending the time with us. Don't forget about our show air weekends on the Motor Trend Network. Check your local listings. You can also find us on Motor Trend On Demand, which is a great resource. And don't forget about our guest, Tommy Boileau. His last name, Boileau. That's where you'll find all of his social stuff. For Kevin Bird, I am Willie B., our producer, Scoop, and our executive producer, Mr. Bob Ecker.
Yeah, and don't forget to check out our website, twoguysgarage.com, and share your thoughts with us. We're on Facebook, too, Instagram and Twitter at Two Guys Garage. Now, the Two Guys Garage podcast is a copyright 2021, Britton Productions Incorporated, all rights reserved.
Yeah, man. So, did you learn anything? What are you going to go apply next, Kevin? If you're going to learn, take one thing from Tommy, what's it going to be?
Definitely the shock tuning, man. Definitely the shock tuning. That's some good stuff. It's a little bit sank in. I'll see if it sticks.
Yeah.
Right? I got to, like, tape it in there, you know, keep it from oozing out as I'm sleeping. But,
yeah, man.
Some good skinny.
It sounds like me trying to convince my wife of anything when he says, no, if you want to change the grip on the front, you got to adjust the back. Like that. Because, yeah, I'll tell you, man, it's just how it is.
Yep.
All right, well, look, we'll catch up with you guys on the next Two Guys Garage podcast. Y'all take care, man.
Take care, guys. We'll see you next time. Two Guys Garage Podcast is produced by Britain Productions. For more episodes, visit iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.